Good morning, Cowboys Nation, and welcome back to another episode of the Writer's Block Podcast. I am your host, David Howman, joined as always by Brandon Clements, my amazing co-host. We're here in the middle of March. We're talking about the Cowboys and free agency and kind of finding ourselves in a weird spot because the Cowboys have actually done some things. When we talked with you guys last week, we had a few different moves that they have made since then. They've traded for a couple of guys. They've signed a few more guys. Nothing that's blowing any money out of the water. They're not winning bidding wars with any teams, but they're being active. They've probably signed more free agents this year than they have the last 2 years combined, just in terms of external players that they've added. So for today, we're in the spirit of March Madness with it starting up this week. And so we've put together a little bracket to go through some of our favorite of the external signings and trades that the Cowboys have brought in. But before we get into that, all of that, Brandon, with these moves that they've made, you know, we talked last week about Solomon Thomas, about Peyton Turner. They since brought back Dante Fowler, who's coming off a double-digit sack season in Washington. He's back with the Cowboys. Of course, was there 2 years and then followed Dan Quinn to Washington. Saw some players also go elsewhere. We were talking last week about Cooper Kupp. He signed a pretty expensive deal in Seattle, Getting $15 million a year. So he's out of the fold. Cooper Rush signed to be the backup for Lamar Jackson. What a stylistic fit there. And then, of course, there was DeMarcus Lawrence, who signed with the Seattle Seahawks and had a few choice words that we'll get into in just a little bit as he was making his way out. But overall, as we've gotten a real good sense of how the Cowboys are filling some of their holes right now and some of the holes that have been created with guys that have gone elsewhere, how are you feeling about the Cowboys and how they've handled this offseason?
Honestly, I'm pleased. I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not pounding the table excited, like, you know, losing my mind kind of a deal. Like, oh my God, they made a trade for Myles Garrett. I'm, you know, going crazy kind of a thing. But no, I think this really is, they're selectively aggressive. I think this is exactly what they're doing. It's they're being aggressive, but not in the way that people would assume that's aggressive, like making the big splash. Like, they're filling out their roster, the Cowboys are. You know, the front office, I got to give them credit. They're filling the roster out, and they're justifying the cost. They're short-term deals, so it's like they're keeping that money flexible going forward. So a lot of these deals, if I'm not mistaken, are pretty much like one-year deals. Like, the one name that I know you like as much as I do is Jack Sanborn. Like, I'm actually, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but, you know, Jack is a signing that I liked, and I know the Bears fans are not happy about that. I did see some Twitter, some Bears Twitter that were not pleased about that. They really wanted him back, and like, you know, I've seen a little bit of, you know, him, so to speak. I can't say I've watched every Bears game. Like, that's I'm a Cowboys fan. I watch the Cowboys games, but I've seen enough of Jack Sanborn to know that he's a good football player. And obviously, you know, the defensive coordinator was in Chicago last year and wanted some guys that he's familiar with to, kind of ring in things, with his new scheme and the way he does things. And Jack's a good fit. I'm really excited about that. You know, just, you know, going through the list of, you know, names. I mean, even Paris Campbell, like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, people are like, oh my God, this is not the receiver, we were trying to get Cooper Kupp, blah, blah, blah. Paris Campbell, when he's healthy, he can be a productive player. Like, I'm not expecting him to be receiver two. Like, anyone that thinks that should just stop right now, because that's not going to happen. But Paris Campbell could be a guy at the back end of the receiving group. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, you know, I love my Ryan Flournoy, you know, yeah, that's my guy. But Paris Campbell, you know, could take his spot, you know, inevitably. Like, that could happen. Paris Campbell.
And even still, after Ryan Flournoy changed his number, he's wearing, for those who missed it, he among other Cowboys, they all changed their numbers this week. Ryan Flournoy will now be wearing number 19. I'm sure Brandon is about to tell us he's the best Cowboys wide receiver to ever wear that number.
I won't go that far, but I mean, Let's be honest, though. Paris Campbell, I mean, he's been in the league, what, a handful of years now. I mean, he was, I believe Ohio State is where he went. And then he also famously went to the same high school, not at the same time, as the king, king himself, LeBron James, St. Mary. I'll botch that one. Sorry, LeBron. But he's an Akron guy, so Akron tough, I guess, is like kind of their thing. But I mean, he's only 27. He'll be 28 by the time the season starts. Like, I mean, it's one of those, you know, he has a high draft pedigree. Like, that's something Paris Campbell does come with. He's got that high pedigree. And the Cowboys have been doing that a lot this offseason, like getting guys that were highly thought of coming into the league. Maybe things haven't gone the way, you know, a lot of us hoped or expected. But, you know, they're finding a new change of scenery with the Dallas Cowboys. And if the Cowboys can hit, not just on like, you know, I'm not saying they have to hit on a bunch of them. If they hit on one or two of them, I mean, that's a win for me because, you know, you're getting good value with some of these guys. Like, looking at the list here, I mean, Peyton Turner, I mean, another guy, mm-hmm. I believe he was a Houston Cougar. Like, he was highly thought of, and a lot of people thought he was going to be really good. And it's in the same thing as Paris Campbell. Injuries kind of affected things. Now, you mentioned the Cooper Kupp thing. I want to get back to that. The one thing that I will, that's why I'm not pounding the table completely for the Cowboys. I kind of wish they would have spent the money on Cooper. I'm not going to lie, because there was that report that, I don't know, I'm sure you saw that CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott put on that, you know, hey, come play for us, you know, come play with us, you know, come, let's team up. And then, you know, they heard numbers. Now, I don't want to say Dak or CeeDee. I wasn't in the room, so I can't assume these things, but numbers were talked about, and the Cowboys were like, yeah, we're not going that high. So that conversation kind of ended there, and that was it. And Cooper's, you know, going back to his stomping grounds. I mean, he played ball in the state of Washington, so Seattle's a natural fit. And I'll be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have paid $15 million a year. I'm not going to lie there. I mean,
$15 million, I would have, not just $15 million, but $15 million over 3 years. I mean,
yeah,
if it's a 1 year deal with $15 million, like, it's still, you know, at his age with his injury history, that's still a little pricey, but like a 1 year deal where, you know, like one way or another. But Seattle, I mean, I know they can get out of it, I think, after 2 years. But still, they're on the hook for multiple seasons for a guy that the Rams just like tried to trade and they couldn't get anything and they were forced to release him. Yeah. You know, I mean, we both talked last week, like, we both wanted Cooper Kupp because of what he can bring to the offense, but we also understood that he is not who he was a couple of years ago when he was the offensive player of the year. So yeah, $15 million a year, but also over 3 years and having him on your roster, on your books for that many years, that's a little tough, bitter pill to swallow. It was similar money that they gave to DeMarcus Lawrence, who we mentioned. He got, I think it was also, it was a 3 year deal, right? And it was $42 million. So just a little bit shy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty good deal for the player that they're getting. But of course, with DeMarcus Lawrence, the thing was, in his interview shortly after he got to Seattle, he said, I knew I wasn't going to win a Super Bowl in Dallas, so I needed to get out of there. And which, you know, Twitter all, you know, did what we do, and we all reacted to that and said, like, oh, well, like, that's, you know, he's taking his shot, but, you know, whatever. That's the craziest thing Tank has ever said in his entire career. But then Micah Parsons gets on Twitter and he responds and accuses him of being jealous, being envious. Of course, Micah had earlier said something like, it's my time once DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, signed with the Seahawks.
Didn't he call him a clown?
He called him a clown. Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence responded to the tweet and said, "He said it. Maybe if you spent less time tweeting and more time practicing, I wouldn't have left." which then prompted a bunch of other Cowboys to kind of anonymously respond in various ways. Osa Odighizuwa tweeted something about something along the lines of, like, focusing on who's in the building, not caring about the snakes outside of the building.
Chauncey Golston's made a comment, I believe.
Chauncey Golston threw some shade at DeMarcus Lawrence, and Chauncey Golston just left the team and went to a divisional rival. He's the last person that I would have expected to have chimed in at that point. But It sounds like a lot of people in that locker room were not a fan of DeMarcus Lawrence.
Yeah, and here's the thing that the main takeaway from that whole spat, I guess, from those boys, Micah Parsons, like, he defends the Cowboys so fiercely, and I love that. Like, I don't, you know what, say what you will about Micah and, you know what he does on social media and you know, his podcast and all that stuff. Micah Parsons, just sign him for life. Like, he loves the Cowboys. Like, anyone that thinks he doesn't, like, he's staunchly, like, just called out a former teammate who was a really good Cowboy, too, by the way, for a long time. And pretty, you know, call him a clown. Like, I'm just like, Micah sometimes should probably not hit the send button, but I
think most times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fair assessment. But I love the fact that he's so staunchly like Cowboy all the way. Like, I just love that about Micah. And it's great that you have a superstar like him that is like, nah, that we ain't playing this game. You talk about my Cowboys. I don't think so. We ain't going to have that. So like, I give Micah credit. Sometimes he might need to, you know, let's scale it back a little bit. But my takeaway was, thank you, Micah, for, you know, standing on your, you know, on your 2 feet and just say, nah, you ain't talking about, you know, this team, this Cowboys organization. Nah, not happening.
Yeah, it was a weird 24 hours with all that going on.
Didn't they sneak in the Miles Sanders part in there too? Like the signing of Miles Sanders in there too? Did I get that timeline right? They snuck in a signing when all this was going on, the Cowboys. I want to say
that might have been Miles Sanders. Yeah. Yeah.
And Cowboys.
Like the Cowboys like tweeted out and we're all just like, read their room. Like there's other things going on right now.
That's what they do though. They want to just kind of go under the radar, be like, oh, we signed Miles Sanders. Yeah. I'm just letting you know.
But and like to the point about DeMarcus Lawrence too, I mean, he's going to go down as, you know, I don't want to say one of the all-time greats because the Cowboys have had so many great players, especially on defense.
Yeah.
But when you think about the Cowboys in this decade and in the last decade, I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence is one of those top players. He's been around for a very long time, played at a very high level. And it really sucks to see it end on this note with all this drama. And the Cowboys even, like I said earlier, they announced, you know, some number changes. They announced numbers for their new players. They gave number 90 to Solomon Thomas, which I'm pretty sure that's the number he's had throughout his career. So that's not a, you know, crazy thing, but it is kind of strange to see like a few days after DeMarcus Lawrence leaves, they're like, oh, yep, we gave your number away. You know, I didn't expect them to retire his number. Technically the Cowboys don't retire any numbers, but it's going to take some getting used to seeing number 90 and it not being DeMarcus Lawrence. So it was a weird, bitter note to end on with the DeMarcus Lawrence era. But he's in Seattle now. Cowboys have brought in some guys, of course, Peyton Turner, Dante Fowler to play on the edge. They have Marshawn Nealand coming back from, he had an injury that he came back from in his rookie year. They're looking for him to take on a larger role. And of course, Micah Parsons is the top guy there on the edge. Which brings us to the theme for this episode, which, as we all know, this is March. There is madness going on, and not just on Cowboys Twitter from current and former players. Brandon, you and I are both, well aware of what March Madness entails. Neither of our teams are in the big dance, but Arizona State is in the prestigious Crown Basketball Championship, I think.
That's wonderful. It's still not the NIT during this one.
Yeah, no, this is supposed to replace the NIT, apparently. There's
wow.
NIT is still a thing, but like Fox created this thing to be better than the NIT, which, you know, we made the tournament. And all I'm saying is Arizona State, this is the first year for this crown thing, right? So Arizona State has literally never missed this tournament. We've made it 100% of the time. And Syracuse didn't, so, you know.
Well, I would expect that from Syracuse. It was a below 500 season. Here's the thing. In all of my life here in 30-plus years of being a, you know, born and raised in Syracuse, I can say this is the first time in my life that we've been below 500, so there's that.
Yeah, I can't say that about Arizona State basketball. But point is, yeah, neither of us need that right now because we've got something even better. We've got Cowboys free agency bracketology coming to you today with a bracket of not all, but some of the moves that the Cowboys have made, external players that they have brought in this offseason so far. And we were talking before the show, we couldn't include all of the players. Solomon Thomas did not make our bracket, which is like, that's a good problem to have when you have so many guys that they've brought in that it's like, oh, I personally cannot fit them all into a bracket when I was creating this very, very professional design that we're about to show for the audience on YouTube. So we had to leave some guys out, which also is reflective of the real life NCAA basketball tournament when they have to leave out great teams like Arizona State, who instead take their talents to the prestigious Crown tournament. But we do have a bracket because this is the time of year for brackets, and we're pulling that up right now. Here is our lovely, beautiful bracket, and we've got going in order. We've got Kyir Elam, who they traded for, going up against the aforementioned Paris Campbell, which could potentially be a one-on-one matchup we actually see in training camp. We've got the two running backs, Javonte Williams versus Miles Sanders, the two linebackers, Jack Sanborn versus Kenneth Murray, and the two edge rushers, Peyton Turner versus Dante Fowler. So we've got plenty to go through before we crown what is going to be our favorite signing that they've made so far, favorite addition since two of these are technically trades. Before we really jump into it, like I said, Solomon Thomas is not on here. Dakota Shepley's not on here. Are these like, you know, are these horrible snubs that I've made not bringing those guys in?
I mean, we all love Dakota Shepley, but no offense, Dakota. We had to tighten the list up a little bit.
Yeah. And Solomon Thomas too. I mean, he was, I think, the third overall pick, you know, not too long ago. But he's primarily been a role player in his career, is going to probably be a role player in Dallas, mostly playing behind Osa Digizua, given the role that he's expected to have versus the role that Osa is expected to have. But first up, we have Kyir Elam and Paris Campbell. Kyir Elam, of course, is the cornerback from Buffalo that they traded for. He was a first-round pick not too long ago out of Florida. His father actually is Abram Elam, who played safety in the NFL, played two different stints for the Cowboys, one in 2006 when Bill Parcells was the coach, one in 2011 when Rob Ryan was the defensive coordinator, followed him from Cleveland. So this is a second-generation Elam Cowboy coming in. Of course, he was a first-round pick, didn't really, you know, had some injuries here and there in Buffalo, didn't play super consistently. A lot of Bills fans kind of had this general sense of him as like, you know, he shows the flashes, but he just doesn't put it together often enough. Yeah. And of course, Paris Campbell, we've talked about, he was also not a first round pick, but a high draft pick out of Ohio State. And it's funny with Paris Campbell, I actually, 3 years ago now, the off season where the Cowboys ultimately traded for Brandon Cooks, I was really pushing for the Cowboys to sign Paris Campbell that year, largely based on the fact that Paris Campbell is one of the faster receivers out there. He ran a really good 40 back at his combine, is very much a viable vertical threat, and the Cowboys really needed that at the time. Some would say they still do. But Paris Campbell was the guy that I was really, really in on because it seems like somebody that was very much in their price range. He ended up taking a deal with the New York Giants, clearly saw the error of his ways going to a team like that. And now he's in Dallas. So, you know, I wasn't wrong. I was just early. But between Kyir Elam, between Paris Campbell, which one are you more excited about in these two?
For me personally, it's Kyir Elam. I think that's the easy choice. I mean, he's not even 24 years old yet. He'll be 24 when the season starts. So he's only been in the league, you know, since 2022. So, you know, there's plenty of tread on those tires, so to speak. I mean, Paris Campbell's, I don't want to say he's super old because he's in his late 20s now, but I think Paris Campbell's been oft injured. Like, we haven't seen the productivity that we, you know, that a lot of people thought we would see out of him. I do like the move. I mean, it's not one of the, like we were just talking about, I think it's a quality move for the back end of the receiving group. But I really think, and this is going to be a crazy take, and this is fine, this is what I do. I mean, Kyer Elam is, I think, is all, you know, think of it this way. I believe, obviously, he's an outside zone corner. I think we all know that. Like, that's his game. So anyone that thinks he's going to play in the slot, I just don't see that. I think he's going to play on the outside, which leads to my next part. Let's say they have Diggs and they have Deron Bland on the outside. So I think Elam is going to be like that. He's going to be essentially that high-level backup for the outside. So, you know, God forbid something happens to one of those guys, he is, you know, he's the next man up, which leads to the next point. Maybe he flashes enough where, you know, the Cowboys decide not to sign Bland to a big deal. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. I'm not saying I want that to happen. Obviously, I want Deron Bland here for as long as possible, but you got to think about it where Elam is a guy who plays, he could play in the position where Diggs or Bland they currently play. So, one of those guys could be movable one way or the other. And Elam, if he plays well enough, you know, the Cowboys could potentially look at this like, yeah, he's still young. He's a first-round pedigree. Why not keep him? So, I mean, that's why I go Elam here, because I think there's more upside here. I think worst-case scenario, he fills out the roster, which was decimated in the secondary. We were playing guys that shouldn't have been on the field at secondary, that, you know, would have been playing in the UFL or, you know, any other of those, you know, Canadian Football League, one of those leagues. Not to say they're bad football players, but they just, to me, they're just not NFL caliber, cornerbacks. And Kyer Elam, to me, he's flashed it. You know, I'm a New York guy, so I follow the Buffalo Bills enough. And I have a lot of Buffalo Bills family members, so I've heard enough about Elam where they're like, you know, hopefully it works out for him. Like, they don't wish anything about the guy, because what I've heard is he is a good locker room guy. He's a hard worker, even though it hasn't necessarily shown up on the field. He's usually one of those guys that comes in early, stays in late. Like, there's been reports out there that I've seen, not only from, you know, talking to people that follow the team, but, you know, I've seen accounts that cover the Buffalo Bills out there in Western New York talking about how Elam is a hard worker. So this change of scenery could be a good thing for him. So I'm very excited to see what happens with Elam. I'm also equally, you know, excited for Paris Campbell, but if I got to choose between the two, Kyer Elam's the pick here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think I won't go as far as to say that Elam is going to have any sort of impact on Deron Bland and his contract negotiations, but I do think it is entirely likely that Kyer Elam is essentially a starter for the Cowboys, because right now the question is who's going to play in the slot for the Cowboys. They've just lost Jordan Lewis to the Jaguars. So I think it's entirely possible that when the Cowboys are in nickel, which is predominantly what teams play now, that they're going to have Trayvon Diggs and Kyer Elam on the outside, because that's where Diggs is best. That's where Elam has almost exclusively played his entire career, going back to his days at Florida. And then they'll put Deron Bland back into the slot, because as good as he's been on the outside, he first came into this league playing slot, and he first gained a starting role in the slot. Of course, he didn't have all those record-breaking picks until he moved to the outside. But he's still a very productive player in the slot, graded out as one of the top slot corners in the NFL that year. And then, of course, when they, you know, go down to base and they only have two corners, it'll, you know, Bland will be on the outside. And Kyer Elam can kind of be that guy that subs in when they want Bland to go into the slot. Now, the other thing too, if, you know, is say that Elam just, you know, doesn't cut it in training camp or whatever. They also brought back Israel Mukwamu, signed him back to another 1-year deal. He has experience playing in the slot. He has been kind of a corner safety hybrid for the Cowboys. So they could also potentially look at him in the slot and keep Bland out on the outside. But either way, I really like the Elam trade. I don't think they gave up a whole lot, essentially came down to a pick swap plus Elam, which for a former first round pick only a couple of years ago, that's a pretty good deal. And it's really interesting because Elam, I think, is a much better fit in the Matt Eberflus defense than he was in the defense they run in Buffalo, where it's a lot of quarters match coverage, where he's essentially starting out in zone, having to transition to man. In this defense is going to be a very similar to, there's going to be a lot more zone. There's going to be a lot more safety help for him. Not as much, kind of reading and then reacting in coverage, being able to be a lot more physical. And it's interesting, when the Cowboys first traded for him, I went back and was looking at some of his draft notes, and Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, he had said when Elam was in the draft, his pro comparison for him was Jalen Johnson, who, of course, is in Chicago, has been an all-pro, has been a multi-pro bowler, kind of rose to his current level while Matt Eberflus was the head coach there, while he was playing in that defense, while Andre Curtis was coaching defensive backs, and he's now in Dallas. So Jalen Johnson kind of ascended to this all-pro level. Kaiir Elam was at least compared to him coming out of college. Now he's playing under the same coach that helped Jalen Johnson reach elite status. I don't think Kaiir Elam is going to be an all-pro this year. He's certainly, more than welcome to prove me wrong in that. But I think this is a really great trade. I will put Kaiir Elam forward ahead of Paris Campbell. Yes. As much as I just said, I've been wanting Paris Campbell in Dallas. But all due respect to Paris, Kaiir Elam, I think
it's not. And one last part, too, about that Kaiir Elam portion of it. Don't forget about Caelan Carson. He's going to have something to say about that in the in training camp as well. And I think Caelan Carson, he has a lot of that dog, like Jordan Lewis. So I wouldn't be surprised if Caelan Carson slides over the slot, and he could him and Elam. I think that could be one of those training camp battles that we're looking forward to watching in the summer too.
Yeah, I think that'll be a really interesting one to watch as well. I think Caelan Carson also projects to do a little bit better in the Matt Eberflus scheme, just because of some of the differences in assignment. But that'll be very interesting to watch. Yeah. But moving on to the next portion of our bracket, we've got the running backs, Javonte Williams, Miles Sanders. Both of these guys were, I believe they were both second round picks. They were both fairly big names a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Miles Sanders had a 1,000-yard rushing season in Philly and then signed a big free agent deal with the Panthers and very quickly got surpassed on the depth chart by Chuba Hubbard. Javonte Williams, as we talked about last week, he was a little bit shy of 1,000 yards his rookie season in Denver. That was under head coach Vic Fangio, and then cycled very quickly through Nathaniel Hackett era. Had an injury in his rookie year that kind of threw him off, had a bunch of different offensive scheme changes from Fangio to Hackett and now Sean Payton. Never really got back to that point. So both of these guys are running backs that at one point looked like they were ascending stars and have since had a little bit of a crash back down to earth. And the Cowboys brought them both in, both on cheap one-year deals. It's kind of like, let's see if either of these guys works. And if obviously I'm sure that they're planning to draft somebody in this draft, but if they get there during the draft and things just don't fall their way and there's nobody that they feel is worthy of selecting like they did last year, they've at least got two veteran known players in Javonte Williams and Miles Sanders. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is which one you're more excited about. So, Brandon, which is it?
For me, honestly, it's a tough call because, Miles Sanders, to your point, he's a Penn State guy. I root for those Penn State guys. We've done well with those guys over the years. And we've already talked about one of them a little bit earlier, and Micah Parsons. But Javonte Williams, too, he's such a fun guy to watch. This to me is like, it's like an 8-9 game. You know what I mean? Like, this is what it is. Like, it's splitting hairs because I really like both pickups. But for me, the tiebreaker for me is Javonte's 3 years younger. So, and I think I think Javonte, I think he has proven more juice at this point. I think he, as he gets further away from the injury situation, I think he's on the, I think he's still slightly on the ascend. I don't want to say he's going to the moon, but I think Miles Sanders is kind of on the decline a little bit more. So I got to go Javonte, but it ain't by much. It's like almost like a, you know, one of those, like, you know, three pointers at the buzzer kind of, like, you know, wins there, so to speak, where it could go either way. I like both players, but give me Javonte. Just the tiebreaker for me is he's 24 years old. He has something to prove as well. So,
yeah, I tend to agree with you. This very much is an 8-9 kind of matchup. So that's a good call from you. It can very easily go either way. I like both of these signings. They're kind of different play styles too. Miles Sanders is a little bit more of that move running back. He's going to give you a little bit more as a pass catcher out of the backfield. Javonte is a bit bigger frame. He's going to be more of your downhill, short yardage kind of guy. But I think when I think about Miles Sanders, I think about how really his career so far, and I mean this with the utmost respect for Miles Sanders, but it's an endorsement of Jeff Stoutland, the Eagles offensive line coach, because he went into Philly and, you know, gradually rose up on the pecking order for that run game. And once he was the lead guy, he goes in and has a 1,000-yard rushing season. And the Eagles were kind of like, you know, hey, we're going to let you hit the market. We're not going to pay the contract that you're wanting to get. And he got a very nice payday from Carolina. Did not have anywhere close to the offensive line skill that he had in Philly as he did in Carolina. Did not play well, got passed on the depth chart, like I said, by Chuba Hubbard, and never really recovered from that. And I think, you know, with so much of the conversation this past year about Saquon Barkley and the amazing year he had, obviously Saquon had a really sensational year. He deserves a lot of props for it. But a part of it is at least been helped out by the fact that he was playing behind that offensive line. He was playing behind the Jeff Stoutland offensive line, probably the best offensive line coach in the NFL. And that makes things a lot easier for any running back in Philly, whether it's Saquon Barkley, whether it's Miles Sanders, whether it's Kenneth Gainwell, whether it's Will Shipley, their rookie that they just had at, I think, Clemson. So for me, I look at the Cowboys and I look at their offensive line. Since that was a bit of a tricky thing for Miles Sanders, they've got, obviously, Tyler Smith has been great. I thought Cooper Beebe had a really good rookie year, but you've got questions, obviously, a hole at right guard with Zach Martin retiring. Terrence Steele has been uneven at right tackle. You've got Tyler Guyton at left tackle, who the Cowboys didn't even really want to play him towards the end of the year. So that's, you know, three out of your five spots that are kind of a question mark to some degree. We probably can guess who the starting five will be, but it's not – like he's coming to a team with a great offensive line. I also think Javonte Williams seems like a better fit just because Brian Schottenheimer, Clayton Adams, so many of these new Cowboys coaches have talked about wanting to be more physical in the run game. And one thing that really helps you when you want to be more physical is having some beef at running back, having somebody who can get downhill, who can drive through contact, who can break some tackles, shrug guys off. Not unlike a Cam Scataboo, if you will, but Javonte Williams very much fits that kind of profile. His game may not be as multifaceted as a guy like Cam Scataboo, who actually, fun fact, led all running backs in yards after catch this past year. So he's not just your downhill guy. He's also a burner with the ball in his hands through the pass game. Kind of best case scenario of both Javonte and Miles Sanders, if you wanted to draft a guy like that, I'm just saying. But in the discussion of Javonte versus Miles, again, happy to have them both in Dallas, but I'm definitely more excited about Javonte Williams. Since we're in agreement there, we can go ahead and advance Javonte on, which brings us to the battle of the linebackers, Jack Sanborn, who we touched on, and Kenneth Murray. I have a feeling we're probably going to agree on this one. But I feel like in the context of March Madness brackets, this is kind of like a pretty typical 7-10 matchup where it's like people are going to look at this and say, oh, you could make a case for either. And then the seven seed just comes out and just like dominates. And it's like, okay, yeah, that, you know, we, that's what the answer always was going to be, but the seeding was close enough. Before I spoil who it is that I'm talking about, what are your thoughts on Sanborn versus Murray?
I was thinking like a 5-12, so 7-10 is not too bad. Okay. That's where the math was for me. And it could be one of those sexy 12-5 upsets that we do see around, you know, this time of year in March Madness. Yeah, Jack Sanborn, I mean, just looking at his stats, like if you compare just stats, Kenneth Murray blows him out of the door. Like that's not even a discussion. But like to me, Kenneth Murray, I think like he was probably one of the better players on the worst team in the league. let's be honest. Like, I mean, I'm looking here. He had 95 combined tackles. Like, you know, he the stats are there. Like, you know, I think he's a good football player. But I think almost to this point too of like Miles Sanders, like I think he might be just on that decline just a touch. And I say that with all due respect, he's only like 26 years old. But I think Jack Sanborn, I think we haven't seen enough of him yet. I think he's one of those guys where he's a diamond in the rough. And what I've seen on tape, he flashes every time I watch him. Like I haven't watched a lot of Bears games, but you know, I knew who he was. I've seen enough of him. But when the Cowboys picked him up, you know, I had to go to the tape, so to speak. I had to go watch some reels. And to me, he just hasn't played enough. Like I feel like the Bears underutilized him. And I think Jack Sanborn is a guy where he could be the free agent signing of the offseason. Like the people at the end of this upcoming season, people are going to be like, man, the Cowboys saw something that maybe not a lot of people thought. And Jack could be that guy. He could be a guy where hopefully he does well and we don't let him go after 1 year, kind of a thing. But I do like both players here. I think Kenneth Murray's a really good addition, but in the spirit of the 12-5 kind of situation, you know, Kenneth Murray is that, you know, he is that five and Jack Sanborn is that 12. In this case, just for the spirit of it and the fun, the fun of this bracket, Sanborn's going to be the pick here for me. I think we're going to go with the upset. But Kenneth Murray, strictly stats, better career, obviously. But I think Sanborn is on the rise. I like the way he knifes through the defense. He's a real effort guy. And I'm looking forward to seeing number 57 and with the star on his helmet this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in agreement as far as like Sanborn's the guy for me. I will say I have watched a lot of Bears games this past year and for a few years. My wife is a Chicago native and unfortunately for her, a Bears fan. So I watch my fair share of Bears games. It's never very fun, but watching Jack Sanborn is fun. And, you know, to your point about him being underutilized, part of that is that they brought in two big free agent signings a couple of years ago in Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards, who, for as good as Jack Sanborn is, those guys just physically can do things that he cannot. So Sanborn was more of a rotational guy for them, but very, very productive, very much fits what Matt Eberflus wants in a linebacker. Keep in mind, Matt Eberflus, before he became a defensive coordinator, he was a linebackers coach in Dallas, as well as a couple of other stops along the way. So he knows his linebackers through and through. He knows Jack Sanborn. The fact that he brought Jack Sanborn in speaks volumes. This is very akin to Eric Kendricks coming in with Mike Zimmer last year for the Cowboys. This is somebody that's going to know the scheme from the moment he walks in. And you mentioned letting him go after a year. I think that's definitely a possibility just because, one, they signed him to a one-year deal, and two, the situation at linebacker right now, the Cowboys, I think in the long term, they want their top two linebackers to be DeMarvion Overshone and Maris Leafau. Of course, Overshone may not play the entire year. If he does, it's going to be a while until he is able to play after the injury he sustained. So we've talked a few times about you can't even really plan on – if he does play this year, great – but probably not a good idea to plan on him.
I think it's a redshirt year this year for him, honestly.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and then with Leafau, it's, you know, he didn't really play significant snaps towards the until end of the year. And he looked really good when he did, but at the same time, you got to question, is he ready for more snaps? So I think that's kind of the motivation behind bringing in both of these guys. Sanborn's a day one starter in this Matt Eberflus defense. He has the instincts, he has the physicality, he has the effort, he has the scheme understanding. Kenneth Murray has the draft pedigree as a former first round pick. But the funny thing about Kenneth Murray is when he was drafted, a lot of people thought it was an overdraft and a lot of people weren't a fan of the pick. And since then, you know, his play, like you said, he's got a lot of tackles. He's been inconsistent though. There's times where he really plays with unclear eyes. He gets, you know, fooled on where he's supposed to go, doesn't diagnose the play as quickly. Statistically, he has been a liability in coverage, is not somebody that you want to have playing a whole lot of pass snaps, but he is incredibly athletic. He has some great speed. He has some great acceleration. The Titans this past year with Kenneth Murray playing for them, at a certain point, they just started blitzing him all the time. And he was able to get into the backfield and blow up some runs. He was able to get to the quarterback and get some sacks because they just kind of realized, hey, like, we can't really trust him in pass coverage, but he's got some great athleticism. We got to find a way to use that, get him moving forward instead of backward. So I think Kenneth Murray's fit, if I were to guess right now, is he's going to be a really good depth guy at linebacker. And then when they do play base formations and they have three linebackers on the field, I imagine he'll be that third linebacker next to Jack Sanborn and Maris Leafau. But personally, I think Jack Sanborn is an easy pick here. I think he's that seven seed that, you know, a lot of people will talk themselves into thinking the 10 seed can be better. Kenneth Murray being that first round pick, like, he can do it. He was a first round pick for a reason. But then once the seven seed Jack Sanborn wins, it's like, oh, obviously, like, that's why he was the higher seed. So that's my logic behind that. But we both agree in Jack Sanborn, and
yeah,
that allows us to discuss Peyton Turner and Dante Fowler, two edge rushers, very, very different career journeys up to this point. Of course, Peyton Turner was a first round pick a few years ago in New Orleans, kind of came into a situation where the Saints drafted him right after they lost Trey Hendrickson. So they brought in a couple of free agents. They drafted Peyton Turner. They had a couple of guys on the roster already. Turner wasn't the one who filled that void right away. When he was ready to fill the void, he got injured, ended his whole season. Now is looking for a fresh start somewhere else. Whereas Dante Fowler has been in the league for quite some time. He was, I believe he was the third overall pick in the year that he was drafted.
Yeah, 2016, yeah.
2016, yeah. I knew it was right around that time, and he came in as, you know, this elite prospect and almost immediately had either an ACL or an Achilles injury, threw off his whole career trajectory, gradually kind of came back into his own playing in Atlanta under Dan Quinn, came to Dallas, was very productive in a bit role in Dallas, and then this past year went to Washington following Dan Quinn yet again and had double-digit sacks. So the Cowboys bring him back in. I don't think anybody's expecting him to have double-digit sacks again, but he's somebody who is a known commodity in Dallas specifically, very much is a pass rush savant, whereas Peyton Turner, you're kind of banking on the upside. You're kind of banking on, like, okay, he's healthy now. He's got all these tools. He's big and long. A guy like Matt Eberflus can do something with him. Two very different profiles when we really break them down. I personally, I'm much more excited about Dante Fowler just because he gives you pass rush today and you know exactly what he gives you. Yes. Specifically pass rush opposite of Micah Parsons. So I think that really fills a hole. Whereas Peyton Turner, I look at kind of similar, now bear with me on this, but kind of similar to when the Cowboys brought in Aldon Smith ahead of the 2020 season. Now, obviously, there were very different circumstances for why Aldon Smith was available to Dallas at that point, but he was kind of a situation of, okay, you know, there might be something there. And then he showed a few flashes here and there throughout that season. But anything you got from Aldon Smith was like, anything you got, you're like, we're grateful for that because we didn't know what we were going to get. I feel the same way right now about Peyton Turner, whereas Dante Fowler, I have higher expectations for sure. So that's the one that I was a little bit more excited about.
Yeah, I am too. I just, the thing that makes me nervous about Dante is like the two seasons he was in Dallas, he had less sacks than the 1 year he had it with the Commanders. Like, so he had a 6 and a 4 sack wise, respectively with the Cowboys. Like he hasn't, like he's popped 3 times in his career. He has had 8 sacks, 11.5, and then 10.5. And then there's a lot of like 2s, 3s, 4s in there kind of a deal. So like, I like Dante Fowler in this situation more than Peyton Turner. I think to me, this is just a strictly, he's a former first round pick. He's got some upside because of that, you know, that pedigree. But you're not, like you just said, you're not expecting much out of Peyton Turner this year. And anything you get from Peyton Turner is a plus. Dante Fowler, I mean, you paid him pretty well based on Cowboys standards. You know, I mean, the Cowboys aren't known to pay. They haven't paid a lot for outside free agents, you know, like this in a while. And Dante got a decent contract. And to me, I'm not expecting him to get double digits either. Like that's not the point. I just want him to be serviceable. And honestly, this might be a take that people are going to roll their eyes at and be like, yeah, saw this kind of coming. I think Dante Fowler has a better season with the Cowboys than DeMarcus Lawrence does with Seattle. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. And I think also, you know, you mentioned how, you know, he didn't really pop in his 2 seasons with Dallas. That was because DeMarcus Lawrence was still there. Lawrence Armstrong was there.
Yes.
I'm sure there's somebody else that I'm forgetting that also played considerable snaps on the edge. I mean, obviously Micah Parsons as well. Yeah. But the reality is with this season, with Matt Eberflus running the defense, like obviously Micah Parsons is your top pass rusher no matter what. And then based on the scheme and based on the way that his defense is built around that 3 technique, Osa Odighizuwa is your second best pass rusher, just in terms of the roles and how they get deployed. So really what you're looking for at this point is for Dante Fowler to come in and be a really good third pass rushing option, which more or less was what he was those 2 seasons in Dallas. It was just he was the third of your edge rushers because Dan Quinn's defense was more based around pass rush from the edge, whereas Eberflus really builds it around his 3 technique. So Dante Fowler is stepping into a very similar situation just in terms of role and expectations that he had last time he was in Dallas. And he was very serviceable in that time. So I think that's a really great signing. I think also I'm pretty sure it's correct that the Cowboys gave him the most money for an external free agent signing that they've had since another edge rusher, Greg Hardy, who did not work out. let's put it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave that one. We'll leave that one alone.
Yeah. So, you know, and thankfully, you know, he was only there for a year. They cut their losses there. They moved on. Yeah. And that's about when DeMarcus Lawrence had his real glow up as a Dallas Cowboy. Yeah. I assumed we probably would both be in agreement on Dante Fowler there, which brings us already, if you can believe it or not, to our final four. it was quick. We've got Kair Elam versus Javonte Williams, both of them advancing to the final four, both of them, you know, playing opposite sides of the field and both in a real opportunity to be a starter. Which of these guys are you more excited about?
I think for me, it's more based on need, not a surplus. And it's Javonte Williams for me. I really like Kair Elam. I wouldn't have picked him to the final four here, but yeah, he, I mean, he's a luxury pick for me, pickup. I think there's like a Kalen Carson, for example. You mentioned Izzy Mokwamu, like he's back in the mix. So like to me, this is just adding depth as a depth signing. Javonte Williams, if things go a certain way, which as we know as Cowboys fans, I mean, we saw Zeke starting football games last year, and then Rico finally played. So, I hope the Cowboys go a particular way in the draft, which I know we'll get to that at a later time. But there's a possibility that Javonte Williams could be leaned on heavily this year in 2025. So for me, that's the more impactful, and I think I'm more excited about that because I've seen the flashes. I watched him in college. I've seen him up close. I'm a Syracuse fan, so I'm very familiar with his games in the ACC. Javonte, to me, nothing against Kyrie, but Javonte, 24 years old, it's to me, he's got a chance to prove some people wrong and really, really start hitting the ground running in his career.
You know, before you started talking, I was ready to make the case for Kyrie Elam. And I still kind of want to because I do genuinely believe that unless the Cowboys add another corner between now and the start of the season, that Kyrie Elam's going to be a starter on the outside with Bland in the slot. That being said, you make really good points. They do have a surplus of options in the secondary right now. Whereas a running back, of course, we anticipate they're going to draft a running back. We anticipated that this time last year, and they didn't draft anybody. Exactly. And like you said, we saw Ezekiel Elliott playing far too many snaps for what his ability was in 2024.
Yes.
So, I you've convinced me to go ahead and join you and cast my vote for Javonte Williams to go to the championship game, to the championship round. It is a close one, though, but I do agree with you, though. Javonte has probably a much higher chance of being seeing significant snaps for this team in 2025 as of what we know right now.
Yeah.
So Javonte Williams with a very narrow, maybe buzzer beater in overtime win over Kyrie Elam.
Yes.
Which brings us to Jack Sanborn, Dante Fowler, two defensive guys, one providing pass rush, one providing great run stoppage. Who you going with here?
Well, I mean, I got to go Dante Fowler. I think that's the obvious choice here for me personally. I think it's sexier to have really good pass rushers. No offense to the linebacker position because they're very, very important. But I think I tend to think Dante Fowler is going to have a really good season. I think because of the attention that Ose is going to get and Mike is going to get. And I think Dante, you mentioned, he's like the third option, which means he's going to have a lot more one-on-ones this year. And when Dante has one-on-ones, he's pretty effective and he can wreck some games. And we've seen it in Dallas. He did a lot of it last year against Dallas with the Commanders. He had a really good season with them with the 10.5 sacks. I think we've seen what Dante can do, and he's been a consistently solid player. And I think Jack Sanborn, to me, I like the player. We haven't seen enough of him yet where I wouldn't be surprised, like I just said a few minutes ago, where Jack could be the signing of the offseason. Like he could be one of those guys where it's like, man, the Cowboys were onto something there. But the chances of that versus what Dante, I think, will bring, I have to lean Dante Fowler. I think Dante Fowler is more of a proven commodity at this point. So I'm going to say Dante Fowler advances slightly.
Yeah, another one of those overtime buzzer beaters.
Yeah.
But I think you make a good point, though. You know, like I said last time we talked about Jack Sanborn, I think this is a guy that the Cowboys are they brought him in. Obviously, there's the scheme familiarity with Eberflus. But I don't think they plan on him being a long-term fixture of this defense because, again, it's going to be overshown. And I think they're also very high on Maris Leafau, even though he was a Mike Zimmer pick and he's playing in a different defense. I think his skill set fits very well in this Eberflus defense.
Yeah.
So I think Sanborn's going to play a lot of snaps for you in 2025. And I think he's going to be very productive just because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But again, the Cowboys, I think, brought him in as a like placeholder until Overshown is healthy to come back, whether that's during this season or next year. He's a bridge.
Yeah, he's a bridge.
He's a very good bridge, but he is a bridge. Yeah. And I guess you could technically make the same argument for Dante Fowler because of where he's at in his career path. Like, he's not a long-term option. He's not someone they're going to lock up to a four-year deal after this.
No.
But he is someone that they're going to, I think, rely on pretty heavily for pass rush outside of Micah and Osa. I think he brings a higher floor just in terms of, you know, we've seen him in this role in Dallas. We've seen him in a premier role in Washington. It was very productive there. So, again, another very slim win there. Yes. Puts Dante Fowler to the championship game. And so it's Javonte Williams, Dante Fowler for the crown of who is the most exciting Cowboys offseason addition. But I am going to throw a curveball here.
Oh, because boy. Oh, boy.
we will not be deciding this tonight on this episode.
Oh, okay.
We're instead going to put it because, you know, we here at the Writer's Block are believers in democracy. We're going to put it to a vote to our loyal listeners on Twitter. We're gonna put out a poll. So if you don't follow us on Twitter at TWB Podcast 214, first of all, change that. You should be following us.
Yes. Yes.
That goes without saying. But also find our poll, vote in our poll, share it with other people so that they can vote in the poll. And when we come back next week, we'll be tallying up the votes. We'll be doing our audits of the votes, recounts if necessary.
Yes.
We will crown a winner between Javonte Williams and Dante Fowler for the best Cowboys offseason edition so far, which, you know, we could come back next week and they've added Tyler Lockett or they've traded for, I don't know, throw me a name that they could trade for that would swing the needle and make Javonte Williams and Dante Fowler irrelevant.
I mean, what other receivers are out there at this point? We got Tyler Lockett. I'm trying to think of some other receivers off the top of my head. I mean, Tyler Lockett.
Jalen Ramsey. They could trade for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's Jalen Ramsey in the corner. Sorry, yeah. Elam, but it's Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, we're going to go with him too. I mean,
Earl Thomas comes out of retirement? No.
Yeah, oh gosh. No, don't go. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. that'd be a long conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, there could be something else that happens between now and then. But next week we will be talking about the winner between Javonte and Dante. I like that they rhyme, Javonte and Dante.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that's how we ended this fun little bracket.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah. So at that point, we're going to quit while we're ahead with Javonte and Dante. And that's really all we've got. Before we do go, though, as always, you know, we'll be back next week breaking down all things Cowboys. Surely there will be plenty more to talk about. But before we start, before we begin March Madness later this week, Brandon, since we did this whole episode about brackets and everything, who's your one team that you've got going really, really far in your bracket? Doesn't have to be the one that you think is going to win the whole thing, but the one team that you're like, they're going to make some noise.
Honestly, Houston. I know.
You're a two seed.
Okay. You want me to give you one? And this is going to be a homer one probably because a lot of people know I'm a Syracuse fan, but I'm also a fan of another team that plays in Texas, Baylor. Baylor has the talent. They were ranked earlier in the season. So I only do one bracket because I'm not one of those people that does like a bunch of them. I did one bracket where I did have Baylor making a nice run. But there's one question I got to ask for you. Is there one team that you think is a Cinderella?
You know, I think I mean, yes, there's a lot of possible options always.
Which one's a sexy pick for you?
Honestly, as I was doing my first run through of my bracket before I like locked it in, I was thinking to myself, like, man, there's not a lot of like, I don't think there's a lot of great Cinderella candidates this year. Like, usually there's a couple each year where I'm like, they have a chance to go really, really far. I just think the way that the bracket shook out this year, it's going to be a little bit easier for some of these top seeds, but I don't know. I, as somebody who does not currently live there, but grew up in Arizona, have watched a lot of basketball from Arizona teams. Grand Canyon University is in this as the 13 seed, I believe. And you mentioned Baylor, the brother of Baylor's head coach, Scott Drew, is the head coach at Grand Canyon. They play a very similar brand of basketball. They play at a very high level. I would not be surprised if they make a big run, if they have a little bit of a Cinderella story, and make the state of Arizona proud, because we're sure not going to be proud of the other Arizona team that's in this tournament, because we don't really like that school from Tucson.
I'm going to give you mine real quick.
Yeah.
Former Syracuse legend, Quadir Copeland, is playing for McNeese State. So, and Will Wade is a heck of a coach. I'm not talking about the other stuff off the court, because we obviously know some issues there. But he's a heck of a basketball coach. And McNeese State was a really a high pick for a lot of bracketologists last year. So I think McNeese State, I think they could beat Clemson in that 12-5 game. So I'm gonna go. That's a sexy team for Cinderella wise.
Yeah. Well, folks, you heard it here first. Grand Canyon and McNeese State meeting in the title game. I don't even know if that's possible without looking at the bracket to see where they're at. But you heard it here first from the writer's block. So keep that in mind as you fill out your brackets and as we prepare for this weekend. An exciting time for college basketball. And continue to follow All News Cowboys. So until next week at the writer's block, signing off for Brandon Clements, I'm David Howman. As always, how about them Cowboys?